Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be looking at what's happening out there in UK markets, as well as the macroeconomic themes that are playing out currently. And to do that, we're once more joined by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Hello again, John. How are you doing?
Yes, very well. Busy old week out here in markets, Alan. And that's something that we're going to be covering straight off today on the podcast. I mean, just, you know, very quick question from your point of view, you know, seeing what's happened, Alan, since the mini budget. I mean, do you think this sort of debacle is going to come to an end anytime soon, or do you think Truss's days are numbered before she's got started?
Well, I think she's blown her credibility, John. It's quite staggering, really. They're just showing a complete lack of leadership, and she looks like she looks like a frightened schoolgirl in the headlights, really, when she's interviewed. And I mean, you know, Kami Kwasi, her chancellor, is equally incompetent. They've got to put these OBR forecasts out. You know, the Bank of England have had to act twice now to try and calm markets, and on the international stage, we're looking pretty damn stupid. So they've got to get these OBR forecasts published. But I think we're looking at least another 2 to 3 weeks. I think it's November the 3rd, if my memory serves me correctly. So we're not going to see anything before then. So we've got a couple of weeks of uncertainty. But underneath, I think, as we've said before, you know, companies are still growing, businesses are still building profits, growing profits, and growing revenues. So we've got to stay focused on that too. And it does mean, because of the uncertainty, that a lot of major stocks are priced at almost in bargain territory.
Yes, and we're going to discuss one of those today. Mm. On the podcast. Now, of course, you know, on the subject of the Chancellor, seeing reports that there's a lot of disgruntled backbench Tory MPs that are looking at getting together and potentially trying to push him out, you know, sort of seeing what he's done, it's very difficult to see how he continues past this. As you said, not only his, but Liz Truss's credibility has definitely been shot. And talking about credibility, you mentioned there, Alan, the Bank of England having to intervene into the bond markets. Mm. But we saw comments last night from Andrew Bailey, the governor of the Bank of England, that pension funds have until this Friday to get themselves in order. Yeah. That's the date that they're set to end their bond purchases. There's been two variations to that so far this week, but it looks as though they're going to be pulling that in just a couple of days. I mean, when that happens, Alan, do you see volatility playing out in markets? Now, of course, it's a specific problem that they're trying to fix here, and that's, of course, you know, maintaining pension funds' yeah. ability to meet their liabilities. But, of course, doing it through a bond market has broad implications. You know, as they take that away, I think they've ramped up to 10 billion purchases a day. You know, do you see a situation, you know, in markets where there's severe volatility once that's removed?
Yes, I think we will see volatility that day, John. I don't think there's any, you know, pension funds have their commitments and liabilities to meet, and they'll do whatever it takes to meet that. And this is part of the problem that we have to battle through because of the storm that's been created through this budget of Kartengs. They've now got to get on top of it and deal with it. But you know, we can't really make any progress on that until I think it's early November, November the 3rd. And of course, given that pension funds have to make those decisions this Friday, I think we're going to see choppy markets. The Bank of England may well have to intervene again to calm markets and to make further bond purchases and on a wider scale other asset purchases also.
Yes. And I mean, really what people were calling for when, you know, in the immediate aftermath of the mini budget was an emergency rate hike. So they've obviously chose to take a different path.
Yeah.
It's going to be very interesting to see how this all plays out on Friday and early next week. Now, of course, Alan, we've had this morning the latest instalment of GDP figures from the UK. It was a contraction of 0.3% in August. And we also saw the July figure revised down from an expansion down to a 0.1% contraction. So there's a lot of talk out there at the moment that we're already in recession. Looking at those figures, that very much looks like it could be the situation. But we're looking at the FTSE 100 here, Alan. It's just in positive territory. And that's a big reminder that the FTSE 100 is by no means a representation of the UK economy due to the composition there. And of course, the large amounts of revenues that come from overseas and the constituent companies there. So positivity there. And we're also seeing a bit of a tick up in the pound as well. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out for the rest of the week as a barometer of the market's feelings around UK assets and the economy going forward. But there is one company that we're going to start off with now, Alan, which is a good barometer for the UK economy. Now, typically, if we're looking at the stocks in the FTSE 100 that do give a good insight to the market's feeling around the UK's financial health and economic prospects, it's the banks and the house builders. And we're going to touch on a trading statement here from a house builder in Barratt Developments, Alan. So looking at shares here, rather soggy morning for them, down 7%. So what did that that trading statement contain, which has caused this downside in their shares this morning?
Well, I think it's just the general uncertainty and volatility. Any statement that is slightly less positive than the previous trading statement is always going to be taken badly, and Barrett's is no exception this morning. I mean, what it's actually said is annual results will still be in line with expectations. So the financial outlook hasn't really changed, but private reservations, the volume of private reservations has slipped because, of course, potential purchasers are seeing interest rates rising, and also some of the mortgage products that were on the table, a few weeks ago have now been removed. So, of course, there's this ongoing uncertainty. But the one thing that we know about the UK housing market is that we're an island, we're a finite territory, and we have a huge population in the UK. There's always a housing shortage. So, however structured those financial products are, products will always be put in place to enable first time buyers to get on the ladder. And I mean, we had this. My son had this a couple of years ago when they bought a place, and the mortgage availability due to mid-COVID was extremely difficult. But something was on the table; they were able to get it, and of course they went ahead. So lenders will adapt their offerings to make sure they take into account the prevailing conditions. But I mean, adjusted full year pre-tax profits should be $972 million, which is pretty well in line with market expectations. Chief Executive David Thomas said, there's strong levels of interest across the country, and I think what we're seeing, probably given that we've got this blip of uncertainty, and as we discussed just now, the pension funds the pension funds have yet to show their hands this Friday. I think probably a lot of potential house buyers might be just sitting on their hands for a couple of weeks and then looking to see how the market responds to the OBR forecast going forward. And of course, if we are in recession, if the data, further GDP data points to the UK in recession, that that could have a measured impact on the sales for house builders going forward. But if you look at Barratt as a stock, The share price is now at this multi-year low. It's at a five-year low, and of course at 320 pence per share, or £3.21, you've got a dividend yield of nearly 12%. Of course, if house sales are impacted, the numbers are impacted, that will probably change. But it's a thought that you could pick the stock up now in the run up to the full year results and grab a piece of the dividend action after that. But that, of course, depends on your longer term view. I happen to think that the housing market will be resilient, and with the Bank of England in charge of setting interest rates and able to intervene in the markets like this, I don't think we're in for the sort of shock that we saw in let's say the 1990s. That said, of course, you know, the market, there is a lot of uncertainty given the macro backdrop with the Russia-Ukraine war. Russia's ramping up its response after the attack on the Crimean Bridge at the weekend. So there are a lot of factors in play that could influence the outcome for Barrett's one way or another.
Yes, indeed. So, of course, Barrett Developments is the first of many trading statements that we're going to get from the house builders. Just looking here, Taylor Wimpey set to put out a trading statement on the 9th of November. So we're going to be drip-fed these trading statements over the coming weeks. But we're looking this morning at the house building sector, and you know, looking at, you know, Persimmon down about 4%, Taylor Wimpey a similar amount. I mean, do you think, looking at this, and this is probably quite a difficult question to answer, but it's, you know, it's a good bit of insight into the setup here. Do you think that the market's pricing in the negativity of each one of these house builders, you know, likely to be negative trading statements going forward, or do you see more days like today when we get Persimmon's trading update, when we get Taylor Wimpey's update, and they're all, you know, likely to be pretty negative? Do we see further downside on the house builders then, or do you think everybody's pricing it in today for any negativity that we see in the next month or so?
Yeah, I mean, the markets look well ahead, don't they? 6 to 9 months ahead, generally speaking. So what we're seeing now is a reflection of where the markets expect to see these stocks, and of course, an awful lot of uncertainty to come. You know, the IMF has warned today that the worst is yet to come for the global economy because of high inflation and rising interest rates. So you know, there's a lot of uncertainty to come in the next few months. And of course, companies with huge exposure to the UK economy will reflect that. But the fact is that in the UK, you know, we have a very strong housing market, and lenders will adapt. They will introduce products tailored to the market conditions at the time. And you know, as it's moving so quickly, you might see those products taken off the market a few weeks later and replaced by a new one. So the lenders are able to respond rapidly to changing conditions. So I think we're in for a soft landing, you know, rather than a hard crash. But you know, obviously there is a lot of uncertainty until we hear these OBR forecasts for the UK economy, which are due, I think, on the 3rd of November.
Yeah, I think they brought that forward to the 31st of October. Okay. I saw, but yeah, not a huge difference.
Even better. It's a few days closer.
Not a huge difference. And, you know, minor administrative changes like that do raise questions why I just don't do it now.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, looking at these house builders here, we spoke about Taylor Wimpey a few weeks ago. You know, I don't think anything's changed there. I think we said at the time, Alan, it's going to be a volatile sector. But, you know, for those reasons that you outlined there about the long-term dynamics of the UK housing market, as we saw back in the financial crisis, whenever there's any weakness in the house builders, we tend to see the housing market bounce back. So for longer-term investors, you know, a sector to keep an eye on and maybe look for an entry for that sort of longer-term 3 to 5 year holds. But you know, for traders that are trying to play the short-term moves, that's a very tough job to do with these house builders at the moment. So I'm sure we're going to be updating the podcast with further trading statements from house builders as we get them in the coming weeks. So we're going to move on now, Alan, and discuss a company that we've had on the podcast on numerous occasions. CEO Kieran Mozeri has been on UK Investor Magazine virtual conferences some months ago now, actually. I think we're going back to probably the beginning of the year, but a little bit's happened since then. Alan, what's the latest from them?
Well, indeed, I interviewed Cadence Minerals CEO Kieran he was actually in the Mapper Friday last week, and we published that one on Friday evening. And I think certainly given the volatility in the share price, and since the company raised some money at 20p, the share price is now sitting at half of that, which is absolutely daft considering what they've got there in the Mapper. But I made a point, you know, when talking to them, you know, they've, even though there appears to be very little activity, there's actually an awful lot going on behind the scenes. Earlier in the year, Cadence, of course, had investments in two Australian lithium and rare earth assets. And, of course, you know, the rare earth is the Yangibana Rare Earths project. And it's turned its initial $1.7 million investment into equity in Evergreen, which is the lithium company that will be listing on the ASX very shortly. And, of course, Yangibana into $5.5 million. So there's a book value there of $5.5 million. And obviously, you know, as those projects develop, that could rise substantially. It also has investments in the Sonora Lithium project in Mexico. And, of course, it owns a chunk of stock in European Metals Holdings, has exposure to the Sinovec lithium project in Czechoslovakia, which, of course, is going to be the hub for the European EV industry going forward. So, you know, very exciting progress there. But for Cadence, it's very much the Imapa iron ore project that is key to this. The Imapa iron ore project's in northeastern Brazil. Obviously, you know, Brazil's renowned for many huge iron ore projects, but this one was owned by Anglo American, valued by them at $600 million in 2012. And then, due to a collapse of the port and very low iron ore prices, they stopped production, and some of the infrastructure fell into disrepair at the port and also the mine. Cadence and Indosino joined together, bought a Mapper out of administration, and they have settled with the banks and the creditors, and they now own 27% of, this is Cadence Minerals owns 27% of the entire Mapper infrastructure, which is the mine, which is the railway that takes the ore to the port, and also the port itself. So 27% of that entire asset, which is huge, you know, it's massive. They have an option also to increase to 49%. But as I say, for an investment of just $6 million, which is incredible. So what they've done as part of the recommissioning process, when I spoke to Kieran, he was talking directly from Santana Port. And he said, literally, you know, a year ago, this was a wasteland. It was just, you know, it was overgrown. There were old shacks here and there. And it's now completely revamped, as you'll see if you look at the video. They have sort of numerous buildings there, which are adjacent to the port, and the whole area has been redeveloped. So part of the process, of course, is to undertake a PFS, pre-feasibility study, which is currently being conducted by Wardell. And on the back of that, they have substantially increased the mineral resource estimate. So the company announced in March it was going to invest its $6 million and take up 27%, the Imapa iron ore project at that point had a mineral resource estimate of 176.7 million tons with a grading of about 39% iron in the indicated category. They last week announced a substantial increase in that from 176 to 276 million tons, grading 38.3% Fe, and a new measured resource of 55.3 million tons, grading 26% Fe also. So this is This is huge progress, a huge step forward. And of course, what that means is the increase in the resource under the ground extends the life of the mine. Well, certainly initially provides a sound basis for an initial 15-year mine life. And of course, it makes financing the project when the actual mine itself is brought back to life, obviously the capex required there is already in the process of being raised, but the increase in mineral resource estimate makes that job an awful lot easier, so they can complete the pre-feasibility study, then move to the DFS, the definitive feasibility study, which is the infrastructure one, looking at the capex required, and then of course moving that work's completed and we put a MAPA back into production. Kieran also said that the reason for the falls in the share price were really off the back of the company's considerable exposure to the iron ore price, which has dropped from I think $200 a ton last year down to just over $100 per ton. So it's almost halved in value, and that's what happens with commodities, and that's really been reflected in the fall in the share price. But with the increase in resource, that to my mind simply hasn't been reflected in the valuation of the company. I mean, Cadence owns 27% of this huge asset. It's done the other deals that I described with lithium and the rare earth Yangibana rare earth project, and it currently has a market cap of just 16 million, which is daft, but you know that's where a lot of resource companies are at the moment. But any tangible progress at a MAPA from this point on, I believe, will have a significant impact on the valuation of the company, and we should see that valuation gap redressed in the not too distant future.
Yes, I mean that is an issue that we're seeing at the moment. An issue, maybe an opportunity. It depends which way you look at it. With a lot of junior resource companies at the moment, of course, you know that they are a speculative sector, of course. And you know when we do see volatility in markets and economic conditions start to deteriorate, they're always the first sector to feel the pressure. And you know, a lot of the time when you're looking at the share prices, there's no real reflection of the actual assets that they have and the projects that they're working on. It's more a reflection of sentiment, and of course sentiment isn't particularly strong at the moment globally. But you know, on the flip side, when you do start to see sentiment improve and when you start to see economic conditions improve with it, you know, this is always, and it has been, if you look over the last 10 to 15 years, one of the first sectors that starts to move to the upside, and likely that Cadence is one of those companies that joins that move when it comes. And obviously the point to be emphasised there is when. So, Alan, we're going to move on now and finish on Dekel AgriVision, palm oil producer based in Africa. What's the latest from them?
Okay, so they've had a, I wouldn't say a torrid time, but there are two. Dekel AgriVision, of course, based on the Ivory Coast, and the Ivory Coast is renowned as a top exporter of cocoa, cashew nuts, coffee, palm oil. It's the world's largest cocoa producer in the world and third largest coffee producer. So you know, it's very much an agricultural powerhouse in that regard. So the way Dekel works is it has two palm oil production plants at Ienwen, which is to the east of Abidjan port, and Guitry to the west of Abidjan port. It is producing palm oil and reports every month on its production levels and that sales of crude palm oil, palm kernel oil, kernel cake, and also nursery plants as well. So the other asset that the company's been developing is at Tabusa, which is almost due north, I think, of Abidjan, and that's a cashew nut plant. And again, what happens? You've got thousands of small shareholders dotted across the Ivory Coast, and they will harvest their crop and bring them to both the palm oil plant and, of course, the cashew nut plant for processing. But there were delays in bringing the cashew plant production facility online. Some equipment was needed, despite arriving last year, it was late being commissioned. So it's really just now starting to come on stream, and we're starting to see production numbers grow and increase. But certainly, in the first half of the year, that's the interim results to the end of June, the company reported record EBITDA and net profit after tax from the INON plant, palm oil plant. First half revenues of just under 20 million euros, which were down slightly from 2021, but margins improved to 25.5% compared to 22% previously. And that, of course, drove EBITDA numbers up 7.7% to 4.2 million euros from 2021. So great progress. The cashew nut plant, of course, recorded a net loss of 200,000 euros, simply because it wasn't commissioned in time to start production. But then we've just we had a few days ago a September production update, and that's cashew nut operation or cashew nut operational update and palm oil production. So in terms of palm oil, Dekel achieved a 15% improvement in fresh fruit bunches of processed compared to last month, and crude palm oil extraction rates up 21% to 90% previously. Fine equipment was installed and commissioned at the cashew nut operation, and Dekel said that it's well on track to meet its 223 objective of processing 10,000 tons of raw cashew nuts. So that's going to significantly impact on the numbers and the production. So I just looked at the news because I've been following this story and looking at when that cashew nut plant comes online, because it's a, you know, potentially an extremely profitable business. And of course, it's great for all these local landowners who are all getting paid out for their harvests that they take into the plant for production. So it's a really, really good model. The one factor is, of course, that the prices of raw cashew nuts and crude palm oil varies, and I think crude palm oil has fallen slightly compared to previously, but nonetheless the demand is still very, very strong. So the company, of course, is we've got two key people there: Lincoln Moore, the director, who's really been responsible for driving this forward, he said they're seeing improvement in crude palm oil volumes and extraction rates are strong, those prices are close to all-time highs, which is important as we edge closer to the next high season in early 2023. So if the season, early season 2023 delivers, and you've got the production of the cashew nut plants as well, I think we could see a material uplift in the Dekel share price. And I'm looking now, the share price is 2.8p. It's the year low is just above 2p, so we're not far off that now. So I think any improvement in these numbers, we're going to see a potentially a big increase. It's now got everything in place to deliver on that. So you're betting on that production improving if you buy the stock at this level. And also, you know, with this, producing those sort of numbers, you know, in on the half year, we've got a market capitalization of 15 million. So in no way is the value of the company, to my mind, reflected in the current market capitalization. So So yeah, you know, potentially a really pivotal and important 6 months for Deckel, and one that I think during which investors will see, certainly buying in now, will see a significant uplift.
Yes, of course, just looking at the last year, full year's profit, Alan, you know, and the current valuation, you know, it's trading sort of roughly 7.5 times earnings. If you see an increase going forward from there, you know, that all of a sudden for a company that, of course, is producing and seeing significant revenues in their operations, does start to look very cheap. So certainly an interesting one there for investors to get stuck into and have a look at those figures. So just as a recap for the companies that we discussed today, first of all was Barrick Developments with the ticker of BDEV. It was then Cadence Minerals, which has a ticker of KDNC. And we finished then with Deckel AgriVision with a ticker of DKL. Alan, thanks very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
So just a note to listeners, we have the next installment of our virtual conferences coming up at the beginning of November. And that will be the Virtual Investment Trust Conference. We have a number of investment trusts lined up to present, including JLEN, the Energy Transition Trust from Triple Point, and of course one from Ocean Dial, their India Capital Growth Fund. So do get yourselves signed up for that and hopefully see you there. Thank you very much for listening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.